Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Up, Cavs Nation. I'm your host, Ethan Sands, and I'm back with another episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. I'm joined by your favorite beat reporter, Chris Fedor. What up, brother?
Ethan, how's it going, man?
I am tired, Chris. It is coming up on 3 in the morning as we are recording this podcast. So for those of you that want to understand the grind of being a beat reporter, this is it. This is going to a game and being there at 5 o'clock, 5:30, not getting out till, let's say, 12, having to write 2 stories, and then hopping on the pod to give you guys what you need, what you want, what you desire, and that is this podcast. And Chris, this was a big one. The Cavaliers needed it. They came out and took down the Indiana Pacers 129-120. And this game seemed to be in the Cavs' favor all the way up till the fourth quarter. It was an interesting one. And I think there's a lot of different points that we have to touch on of the Cavs game that we saw tonight. So let's work backwards. Fourth quarter, Darius Garland has been struggling the entire game, has 4 turnovers entering the quarter, just 7 points, and homie comes in and splashes 3 three-pointers, 1 before going to the bench, and the Cavs didn't really see any adjustments being made. Actually, the score got closer while he was on the bench, and then J.B. Bickerstaff prompted and chose to go back to their starting point guard, and Darius came in and did a job. And Chris, this is something that you specifically have talked about a lot this season, and especially on this podcast, that the opportunities were going to add up to an opportunity that the Cavs would need him to cash in on, talking about Darius Garland. And he did just that in probably the biggest moment this season to secure a playoff spot. And Chris, it was huge. Dagger, triple, step back, and like we've said, the Cavs needed it, and the fans, and we have talked about how Darius Garland has not produced as he's needed to in late-game situations and crunch time, and today, he changed that narrative, if just for a day.
Yeah, it was really good to see, Ethan, just how the Cavs as a whole responded to multiple runs by the Indiana Pacers, because Indiana is a playoff team, right? Indiana's not Memphis. Indiana's not Washington. Indiana's not Chicago. They're a play-in team, but this is a legitimate playoff team that is probably going to be competitive in the first round against whoever they play. And the Pacers put constant pressure on the Cavs in the second half of this game. And each time Indiana charged forward, each time the Pacers pulled close, the Cavs responded. Their toughness was tested, their togetherness was tested, their poise was tested. But when the Cavs needed to step up and make the plays, they were able to do it. And they weren't overly reliant on Donovan Mitchell to do it. And that is big growth for this team. Look, Donovan, we understand. He was great tonight. It was just the second 30-point game that he has had since late February. Showed more explosiveness. Showed more burst, more lift, set the tone in the first quarter with 13 points. But in the fourth quarter, Donovan said it, he was exhausted. He was tired. This game took a lot out of him. And, he's still not 100% back to where he was. before the All-Star break. So in a fourth quarter where Donovan Mitchell scores only 2 points in 9 minutes, the Cavs outscored the Pacers 32-26 in the fourth quarter. And in the final 3:30, they outscored the Pacers 12-6, with Darius accounting for half of those points, and Donovan Mitchell deferring to Darius in the final minute of the game. He even talked about that afterward, saying that I was exhausted. I had a terrible possession a little bit before then when I took 16 dribbles when backing somebody down in the post, only to go nowhere. So for the Cavs to go elsewhere in late game situations and have those guys step up in a game of this magnitude, in a game with these stakes, and in a game that had that level pressure, everybody in the locker room said it, Ethan, they treated this like a playoff game. You can't duplicate the playoffs at the beginning of April or the middle of April. The only time you can actually know what the playoffs are like is when you're in the playoffs. It's a different style. It's a different feel. It's a different atmosphere. It's a different environment. Everything is different in the playoffs. But for the end of the regular season, this was as close as the Cavs were going to get to a playoff-like game. And for guys to step up in the fourth quarter, especially Darius, was big time. And all of those guys deserve a lot of credit because, like I said, Donovan was exhausted. Donovan wasn't himself in the fourth quarter. He wasn't productive in the fourth quarter. And that's a big evidence of growth for this basketball team. And it matters going forward into the playoffs because teams are going to try and take Donovan away. They're going to try and get the ball out of his hands. And other guys are going to have to step up and make plays. And other guys did tonight against the Pacers.
Yeah, Chris, and this is the first time that the Cavs are going to a playoff series, to the first round of the playoff series in back-to-back years since the 2016-2017 season and 2017-2018 season. This is a good team, but we've talked about all year long how the importance of even using Donovan Mitchell when he's not at 100%, whether that's injury, whether that's fatigue, whether it's whatever, to take eyes off the other players and for them to be able to contribute and also to be able to just get to the basket, score, and do what they need to with the lack of attention that Donovan is taking from them. And tonight, that was the case. And that's exactly what this Cavs team has been working for the last, I don't know, the entire season. So it was great to see, one, but I think we have to give credit to someone else, Chris, because this Indiana Pacers team does not have all that size that we've talked about with the Orlando Magic, with the New York Knicks, etc. Like, those teams have size. This Indiana Pacers team does not as much. So the focal point for the Cavs today was get the ball inside and feed it to Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. And those guys, let's say this, Chris, missed two shots combined from the field. And those two guys were exceptional from the field, being able to not only contribute offensively, but also defensively. I mean, I went and talked to Rick Carlisle before the game, and he talked about the importance of their guys just understanding that they can't just drive into the paint willy-nilly with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley being there because they have the potential to block shots with their elbows. I thought that was hilarious. But the Cavs really did show that tonight, and Jared Allen and Evan Mobley played to what they needed to, and Jared Allen was just a menace on the boards, doing everything that needed to be done, especially when he looked tired. He played 38 minutes. He's been playing every single game since the first five games of the season when he was out with an ankle bone bruise. He's not missed a game since then and has continuously been the common denominator for the Cavs. Good, bad, ugly, it didn't matter. Jared Allen was going to show up. And that difference from him from last year to this year, we talk about toughness a lot. And the toughness to show up every day. And the best thing that I've seen from Jared Allen that we talked about tonight with Jared is that he's not doing anything for himself. It is all for his teammates, for his guys. He didn't even know what the playoff seating and sections and things of that nature looked like. He doesn't care.
My ass, he didn't know. Get out of here with that. He said he didn't know. I'm not buying that for a second. That does not pass the smell test. Nope, nope, nope.
I mean, sure. Maybe he knew and alluded to he didn't know, but I agree with him. It's like doing calculus, trying to figure out what is needed and what's not. But he literally came in and saying that it sounded like the teammates that he has wanted a good seed, so he was going to put his heart on the line, put his body on the line for this team. And that's exactly what he did all night long. And we saw it in the latter half of the game. Like, usually you'll see Jarrett, like, kind of slimp off sometimes to go back when it's, like, an offensive rebound opportunity or whatever. But not tonight. Jarrett was in the mix, going into the sideline, going all out of bounds and stuff, just fighting and giving everything he could. And that's the playoff atmosphere, Jarrett Allen, that this Cavs team is going to need going forward.
Well, the other thing is, Ethan, a big part of playoff success is capitalizing on matchups. Can you recognize the advantages that you have? Can you continue to take advantage of those? Is your focus where it needs to be? Is the attention to detail there? And the Cavs clearly recognized that they had a strength inside. Half of their points tonight, just about, came in the paint. Jared and Evan were great. And you got to give Karis, Darius, Donovan, the engines of the offense, a lot of credit for the recognition of that. Okay, we understand our advantage is inside. Let's make sure that we also attack the paint. Let's make sure that we also break down defenders. Let's make sure that we keep Jared Allen involved. Let's make sure we get the ball to Evan Mobley. Because there are going to be other times or other matchups throughout the course of their postseason run, however long it goes, Ethan, where they're not going to have a great advantage inside. And it's going to be about trying to find other ways to attack the opposing defense. But I thought the Cavs had a really good game plan coming into this one, and I felt like they executed it really, really well. And a big part of that, obviously, was Jared Allen. Another big part of that was Evan Mobley. And you're right, these guys are going to have to play big in the postseason because it is going to be physical. It is going to be about limiting second chance opportunities. It is going to be about hustle plays, defending the paint, contesting shots. All of those different things are going to matter. And Jarrett, you got to give him a ton of credit. Like, this is a guy who was just hammered following the series against the Knicks, saying that he was soft, saying he got outplayed by Mitchell Robinson. He got himself in trouble by saying that the lights were too bright. Everybody got on his case about that. He had to get rid of his own social media because he was getting so much backlash. And look, we're not in the playoffs yet, so final judgment on Jared Allen is not coming yet. Making any kind of sweeping declaration about Jared and how much he learned from the playoffs, we can't do that yet. But this has been a really, really good season for Jared. And in so many different ways, Ethan, he has shown just how important he is to the Cavs' success and why so many people talk so highly of Jared.
And Chris, I mean, we're talking about the playoffs, right? So sure, we have to look at the standings and the possibility that the Cavs see this Indiana Pacers team again in the playoffs. Chris, this is insane. The 5, 6, and 7 seed in the Eastern Conference all have the same record. So this final game of the season is pivotal for everybody involved. And yes, fans, the game starts at 1 in the afternoon. This is going to be crazy, but let's look at this. So the Cavs are seeded in the 4th seed currently. The New York Knicks are a game ahead of them in the 3rd seed, and the Milwaukee Bucks are a game ahead of them in the 2nd seed with the same record as the Knicks. The Milwaukee Bucks currently have the tiebreaker on the New York Knicks, that's why they're ahead in seeding. But the Cavs are in the 4th seed, Orlando's in the 5th seed, Indiana's in the 6th seed, and Philly is in the 7th seed. Philly plays the Nets in their last game on Sunday, Indiana plays the Hawks, and Orlando plays the Bucks. And let's be fair, the Bucks are without Giannis Antetokounmpo. So it's a different matchup than Orlando would generally have against the Bucks.
Didn't matter the other night.
Yeah, it didn't matter the other night either. But the Bucks lost to the Thunder tonight pretty handedly. But it's just going to come down to the wire. And we've talked about the Cavaliers kind of looking and watching and seeing what they need to do to get the best first round matchup. And it's going to be a lot of iPad watching and things of that nature on the sideline on Sunday for sure.
Also feels like the Bucks are trying to game this thing to avoid Philly. It really does feel like that. I'm not sure that that's exactly what they're doing. Maybe some of their guys just need some rest down the stretch, including Dame tonight against Oklahoma City. But it does feel like the Bucks want nothing to do with Philadelphia, and you can't blame them. Look, if you're any team in the Eastern Conference and you have the choice, you don't have the choice, it doesn't work that way, but if you did have the choice, anybody would want to play Orlando or Indiana at this point instead of Philly, instead of New York. So it'll be really, really interesting to me, Ethan, to see how some of these teams play it on Sunday. The guys that they make available, the level of intensity that they play with, and what kinds of interesting things they do with their lineups and their rotations, who they play in the first half versus the second half. It's going to be really, really interesting for me to watch that. But yeah, I mean, the Cavs are in a situation still going into Sunday where they could finish 2, they could finish 3, or they could finish 4th. And who they would match up with in the first round would be strikingly different depending on where they would finish. Just like Milwaukee, just like New York, just like Cleveland, I'm sure all these other teams have opponents that they prefer. Again, it doesn't work that way, but I'm going to be fascinated to see how it plays out on Sunday, because if you're the Cavs, you obviously want the easiest road to playoff success, because it wasn't about making the playoffs. That was not a celebratory moment for the Cavs. Yeah, you wanted to win tonight against Indiana. You treated it as if it was a playoff-like game. Those kinds of stakes, home court, avoid the play-in tournament at all cost. And the Cavs got the opportunity to do that tonight. But it wasn't some over-the-top celebration because they won 51 games and they made the playoffs last year. They expected to make the playoffs. George Niang was talking to me in the locker room afterward, and he was like, I didn't come here to miss the playoffs. I didn't come here just to get to the playoffs. I came here to make a real run at this thing. So for the Cavs, their goal is to get out of the first round and see how far they can take it. See if they can make a deep postseason run. Obviously, their chances of doing that are a lot better if they face Orlando in round one or if they face Indiana in round one. Because if they face the Knicks in round one, their chances of making a deep playoff run, not so good. Same thing when it comes to Philly. So if you're an organization that has aspirations to try and get out of the first round, which is what the Cavs' stated goal is, obviously they want to compete for a championship. Donovan Mitchell is somebody who needs to get beyond the second round of the playoffs. Otherwise, more questions are going to pop up about him and what kind of playoff performer he is. But the stated goal is to at least win a first round playoff series, get further than they did last year. And their chances increase if they get Orlando in round one or Indiana in round one.
I want to go back to what you had said earlier about the guard play tonight, because the guards were obviously pivotal in facilitating and getting the actions going and being able to attack the basket and get looks for the bigs. But I want to go back to looking at what Rick Carlisle said before the game, because he had some pretty nice quotes about the Cavs, I'm not going to lie. And one of them was that, quote, when you have Caris LeVert as your guard off the bench, you got pretty good guard play because Caris LeVert can play. And we saw that tonight. We've seen that in the past couple of games. And Caris LeVert has been able to be someone that has been solid off the bench all year. He's been able to be someone that if J.B. Bickerstaff is unhappy with how Garland is playing, he's able to switch those out. And Caris LeVert has been able to be the dynamic duo with Donovan Mitchell at times as well. And I think the biggest thing with Caris LeVert is he's okay with his role. Whenever he goes back to the bench, even though he might be on a hot streak, like tonight he hit a basket and was immediately taken out because it was time to switch or something like that. And he went back to the bench smiling, hyping up the bench, and getting everybody involved. It's been great to see someone like that who knows his role, who knows how to play the game, and is still able to be so involved in everything, emotionally and just on the court. But Chris, I think the biggest thing that we have to look at for this postseason is, will J.B. Bickerstaff be able to outcoach whoever he's up against to help the Cavs in whatever situation they're in? And tonight, I'm going to say he outcoached Rick Carlisle with how he coached down the stretch, making the decisions he did, playing with Evan Mobley with five fouls and figuring out when and where to put him in the game, knowing when to put Darius Garland back in the game, and things of that nature. And obviously, it's not a seven-game series, so we'll have to see what that looks like and if he'll be able to continue that success if they play the Pacers in the first round. But this is something that Rick Carlisle said about this team. Quote, "They've got a unique group with their size. J.B. Bickerstaff has done an amazing job of reinventing this team with size. That was not the trendy thing to do 3 or 4 years ago. He's done a masterful job with the roster and developing their talent." So, for some people who have been calling for Bickerstaff's removal, even though he's taken this team who's lost 60% of their starting lineup at times, who've had Darius Garland and Evan Mobley out at times, and been able to still be on the cusp of a 50-win season, I think we have to take a look at what he's been able to accomplish as well, and how he'll be able to show how he's improved in a 7-game series. I think we both understand that even if they don't get past the first round and J.B. Bickerstaff does his job and coaches well and things of that nature, if they don't make it past the first round, there's a high possibility that he gets the boot and takes the blame for this season anyway. But what do you think J.B. Bickerstaff can do in this situation, and what do you think he needs to improve on? Or what do you think about his coaching ability tonight against Rick Carlisle, who has won a championship, by the way?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to make too much about that, just because, you know, the real test of a coach when it comes to the playoff chess game, it's a 7-game series. Scouting reports are so specific, game plans so detailed, matchups. So much is known on each side of what a team wants to do. There's so much that goes into it. So it's, can you make adjustments quickly on the fly? And that, to me, is one of the bigger questions when it comes to JB coming off the series against the Knicks. Now, it's entirely possible that JB is a better coach because of what he went through, because of the failures that he had in that series against the Knicks and being outcoached by Tom Thibodeau. Just like it's entirely possible that Darius is a different playoff performer based on some of his failures against the Knicks. And you can say the same thing about the other guys. Experience matters. Even for a coach like JB, who has been around a long, long time, he's only been in 2 playoff series as a head coach. So he talked about learning from that. He talked about being a better coach from that. And to me, it comes to, can you make decisions quicker? Because a few things that JB did well in the series against New York happened game to game, right? He saw what happened in game 1. He watched the film. He was able to use the extra day, the extra practice time, put in a varied game plan, change up the lineup, change up the rotations, give other guys a shot, pull some guys out of the rotation. All of that stuff seemed like it was happening in between games. But it needs to come between the first quarter and the second quarter, the second quarter and the third quarter, halfway through the third quarter and the beginning of the fourth quarter. So it's just like decisions when it comes to coaching, they have to come quicker in the playoffs. And that's something that I'm going to be watching from JB going into this first round series against whoever it may be. The other thing is, how willing is he to lean on the data from the regular season that point to what are the best 5-man lineups? What are the best 2-man combinations? And would he be willing to make what could be some difficult decisions? Because, you know, some of the better 5-man lineups that the Cavs have, they don't include Darius Garland, right? They don't include Evan Mobley and Jared Allen together. They may include Dean Wade instead of George Niang. So how willing is JB to lean on that kind of data and maybe go to some of those lineups that could be unconventional, that could be controversial, that could ruffle some feathers, things along those lines? That's another thing that I'm going to be watching for in the playoffs. And then, of course, Like, the other stuff is the ATOs, the sideline out of bounds, the baseline out of bounds. All that kind of stuff is obviously way under the microscope as well.
Chris, you also mentioned Dean Wade, and J.B. Bickerstaff mentioned pregame that Dean is not going to play in the last two games of the regular season, and he could not disclose whether he would be available for the playoffs. Dean Wade was in attendance at the game tonight, as he has been for the last couple of games, and as he was walking out of the arena, I heard him talking to someone, it could have been a fan or whatever, but saying, it's coming along, talking about his knee. So whether or not he was saying that to a fan and saying that just to give them hope or whatever is a whole different thing. But any progress is good progress for the Cavs when it comes to Dean Wade because of how integral he is to that defense. And like Chris mentioned earlier, what he can bring in different rotations and different lineups. Just giving teams a different look is a big thing in the playoffs as well. But Chris, I think we're almost ready to wrap this podcast up, and I want to do a full circle moment. I want to talk about Darius Garland talking after the game, talking about how he has been looking forward to the playoffs since last year. Because he says that this Cavs team is hungrier, this Cavs team wants it more, and this Cavs team is ready to show what they can do in the playoffs. And I know, like we said a lot today, people can just say things to say things. But the vigor and the confidence that he said these things made it seem like not only was last year's playoff a distant memory, but one that they want to rewrite history to. And Jared Allen also talked about how the label of being soft is not going to go away from the league until they erase it themselves with their performance this year. And I thought that was very true. He was very honest and said, even if the label is unfair, that's just how the NBA is and how NBA fans are. And those are big, big things, Chris. And I think you need to hear that from the guys that you consider captains and leaders of this team.
Right. You definitely need to hear it. And it's great that they have that mindset. They got to show it, though. That's what it comes down to. I was having a detailed conversation off to the side, a one-on-one and exclusive with Donovan Mitchell in the locker room for a big feature that I'm working on when it comes to Donovan, just his mindset going into the playoffs, the reputation that is starting to follow him. And all of that stuff is going to come next week. I don't want to give it away right here. But one of the things that he said that really stood out to me is, Chris, I'm saying all of this stuff to you right now because you're asking me these questions and because it's clear that you're working on this story. And we have the kind of relationship where we're going to sit down and we're going to have this talk. But I have to go out and do it. We, as a team, have to go out and do it. And it's the same thing when it comes to the Cavs. Jared Allen understands. Darius Garland understands. There's only one way to rewrite the story, and it's to play better in the playoffs. It's to show up in a different kind of way. It's to play with a different level of toughness. And I think the good thing for the Cavs, Ethan, is that you can sit there and you can talk about the playoffs and what they're going to be like. And some of the guys can sit there and they can tell you what the playoffs are going to be like and what's required to consistently win and compete in the playoffs. But you have to feel it. You have to experience it for yourself. And now there's just not as much uncertainty going into these playoffs about, is Darius Garland fully understanding of the level of physicality that he's going to encounter in the playoffs? Does Evan Mobley truly understand what playoff level toughness really is? Does Jared Allen, and you can go up and down the list, they played against the Knicks last year in the first round of the playoffs. There is not a team that they will see this year in the first round that is going to be tougher, burlier, more dominant inside, better defensively than the group of Knicks that they played against last year. They know what to expect. They know what it feels like. They know what playoff toughness truly is. They understand that the referees are going to swallow their whistle in certain points, and they're going to allow more grabbing, more physicality, and all that kind of stuff. And the fact that the Cavs went through that last year is only going to benefit them coming into the first round of this playoffs. And I think part of the reason why, I don't want to say they're talking tough or they're talking big, but part of the reason why they're expressing so much confidence in their ability to compete at a different level in the playoffs is because of what they went through and now what they know to be true about playoff basketball.
Chris, I want to end the podcast by saying I got to write a baseball story on top of all of this nonsense today. I was like, what is going on here? I got to do a 2-on-1 interview, basically, with Darius Garland and Bally Sports' Serena Winters, because everybody wanted to go talk to Donovan Mitchell at the podium, and I was the only person other than Serena in the locker room today. And Serena pulled out...
For that interview, yeah.
Yeah, and Serena pulled out of her bag of tricks that Darius was potentially throwing the first pitch tomorrow like at the Guardians and Yankees game. And I was like, hold on now. This is breaking news. This needs to be done now. And so we talked about that a little bit, how excited he is to be doing that. And yes, he confirmed Darius Garland is throwing out the first pitch, and he's doing so before Donovan Mitchell. I'm just going to throw that out there. Yes, Donovan has only been here for 2 years to Darius Garland's 5. But as we know, Donovan is a big baseball guy. But Chris, did you know Darius Garland is a big baseball guy? He wanted to play baseball growing up, and then until his AAU basketball took over his schedule, Darius was playing baseball and wanted to play baseball long term. But, you know, his dad convinced him, because you were playing good basketball or whatnot, that he's going to go play basketball full time. And so that's basically a little bit of the story, but you can read more about that in my story on Cleveland.com for anybody who is listening.
I also believe that Darius had a brief interaction tonight before the game with Yankees pitcher Marcus Stroman, who was in the crowd tonight. Obviously, the Guardians and Yankees got rained out, so a couple members of the New York Yankees came to Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse to watch the game. I know Donovan interacted with Marcus Stroman. They had a brief get-together, and Stroman was also kind of like sitting near the Cavs bench as guys were warming up, and Darius went over there to the corner. Maybe he got some tips from Marcus Stroman about what pitch to throw, because, you know, everyone's going to be watching. These things go on YouTube. These things go on X. We don't want a 50 Cent moment from Darius Garland, that's for sure.
Well, Darius said he was a pitcher growing up, so...
It doesn't matter, man. It's been a long time.
Darius joked that he might throw a curveball or something off speed. I was like, dog, just throw the heat. Just bring the heat.
Some of the most confident people when it comes to the first pitch are the ones that go in a little bit too confident, and then they end up bouncing it in the dirt or throwing it to the backstop or going 50 Cent and throwing it to, you know, basically the dugout. So let's hope that Darius doesn't do that.
Well, fun fact, Chris, about Marcus Stroman, because actually I did not know that he was in attendance tonight. I didn't peep that. I was too enveloped in the basketball game. But my first Major League Baseball story that I wrote when I was in Atlanta covering the Braves was actually on Marcus Stroman and his game and his do-rag, and his infamous do-rag, I should say. And that was one of my first game stories when I was at MLB. And so that's crazy to think about, that worlds collide like that. I knew they were in town, obviously, but did not know that they were at the game tonight. And, well, I guess I could have assumed because of the rain out. But anyway.
He's 5'7". And when I saw him before the game, I thought to myself, why didn't I stick with baseball?
It doesn't always work like that, Chris.
No. It doesn't, but I mean, I was a pretty good baseball player growing up. I was on travel teams and stuff like that, but I decided to give that up and focus on other sports. But, you know, 5'7" guys can mash like Jose Altuve, or 5'7" guys can pitch the way that Marcus Stroman can. Maybe I would have been able to, too. I guess we'll never know, Ethan.
I hate you for this. No way you just said that. With me being 5'8 and playing collegiate baseball and not being able to make it to the league, I feel like that was a slight. That was disrespectful. No, I'm just kidding. But obviously, with the Cavs season going to wrap up at the end of June after the NBA Finals, if they make it that far, then maybe we can circle back to this baseball conversation and figure out just how good we were. Go back down memory lane, maybe. But with all that being said, all the fun that was had of today's win against the Indiana Pacers, the baseball talk, and looking towards the playoffs, that will wrap up today's episode of the Wine and Gold Talk Podcast. But remember to become a Cavs insider and interact with me and Chris by subscribing to Subtext. If you want to be the first person to know who the Cavs will match up against in the first round of the playoffs after Sunday's game, this is where you can get that information from me or Chris, and we can give you information on updates on injuries like Dean Wade, Sam Merrill, and those guys. To get this information, you can sign up for a 14-day free trial or visit cleveland.com/Cavs and click on the blue bar at the top of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine. All you have to do is text the word stop. It's easy. But we can tell you that the people who sign up stick around, because this is the best way to get insider coverage on the Cavs from me and Chris. This isn't just our podcast, it's your podcast. And the only way to have your voice heard is through Subtext. Y'all be safe. We out.